Earth and Sky.
When you recognize that science truly is everywhere, you don't see science as a subject, you see science as a way of life. You see it as an outlook, as a perspective, as something that you can take in as a full-body experience.
You're listening to Columbia University physicist Brian Green. He's made a second career of explaining complex ideas and getting people excited about science. I spoke to him about the World Science Festival in New York City in May 2008. Green co-founded this event.
Can you just start out by telling me a little bit about the World Science Festival and why there's a need for it?
Sure. The World Science Festival is an event that will take place in New York City May 28 to June 1st that aims to be a public celebration of science. It's an event that will present programming in sciences across a whole range of sciences: cosmology, quantum mechanics, neuroscience, sustainability, things for adults, things for kids, things for the novice, things for the more sophisticated science enthusiast. And the goal is to really shift science from the cultural outskirts, where it really resides, right to the cultural center. I mean, we have celebrations across the country. We have festivals of music, of film, of theater. We need to have a celebration of science because science is what is going to drive so much of what we do, what we think, and how we shape our future going forward into the 21st century. We need to have a public focus on science.
So how is this a World Science Festival? When it takes place in New York City, how does it go beyond that?
Well, we called it the World Science Festival for a couple of reasons. The first is perhaps a little more philosophical. We see science, as many scientists do, as something which doesn't care about national boundaries. Science really is the global language. The things that I work on as a string theorist are the same problems that my colleagues in every other country around the world are working on. Moreover, the problems that we face, that we look to science to solve, climate change, the potential of global pandemics, alternate energies, these are issues, again, that cut right across all national boundaries. So science really needs to be seen for what it is, the true global language that addresses issues of worldwide concern. So that's the first reason. The second is, as an event like this takes hold, it really can be a magnet for those people who care about these issues, who are excited by science, to converge from the four corners of the earth.
So I saw on the website that you have this quote about how science can be really intimidating to people, and, you know, the things that you were just talking about are ways to bring people in and show them something different. Why is science so initially intimidating to people?
Well, I've spent a lot of time thinking about why science is intimidating to people, and I think it's largely because when we teach it, we typically teach the results of science and we teach the methods of science. So we teach our students how to calculate, we teach them the results that researchers have found, but we don't really ever focus on the stories of science. And that is where the real drama of science sits. I mean, when you actually speak of the human beings that have devoted their lives to solve problems like how did the universe begin, or what are the fundamental constituents of matter, or how is it that we are able to have this gray matter inside our head that produces thoughts and feelings, when you actually allow the drama of science to unfold, people interact with the subject in a very different way. They're brought in because it's a more humanizing avenue to explore these insights into the nature of the world, the nature of reality. So what we are doing in the festival is having programs that are structured along those lines, really trying to pull out the stories of science, the near misses, the heroic insights, allowing people indeed to get to the results of science, but through a trajectory that allows them to feel like they're going on a journey. They're following a narrative. They're part of a story. And that's really what will distinguish these kinds of events from what happens, for instance, in the classroom.
You've also been called one of the best explainers of science. And do you have any tips or suggestions on how scientists can be better communicators?
It's a great but difficult question. I find that what works for me is that when I'm doing my own research, I'm never satisfied if I just understand the mathematics behind what it is I'm working on. I always try to build an image in my mind, a visualization, in order that I have a more intuitive sense of what's happening. And then when I try to speak about these ideas to general audiences, I focus on those visual imagery, those visual images that I was developing while working on whatever it was I was studying, and then just try to dress them up in language that is more palatable, is more accessible to someone who doesn't have technical training. I think the bottom line is you have to recognize that there is an interest on the part of the general public. It's just a matter of describing things in a way where you don't need a PhD in a subject. You don't need technical training. You don't need mathematics. Get to the exciting insights, the exciting results, and the exciting stories that led to those results.
So how do you make science more exciting and more accessible when people are being inundated with so much information in so many ways? How do you make science stand out?
Well, I think the thing that makes us in a enviable situation is where, say, a film director needs a great script to produce an exciting movie. The natural world gives us our script. It gives us the most spectacular material. We don't have to make it up. We don't have to pay somebody to conjure some idea out of their imagination. We simply look at the universe. And when you recognize that, for instance, time slows down near the edge of a black hole, when you recognize that space contracts when something is moving quickly, when you recognize that there may be little strings vibrating at the heart of matter, when you recognize that we are beginning to manipulate things on atomic scales, perhaps being able to build microscopic robots that you can inject into the bloodstream that will repair blood vessels and other issues that are afflicting you. These are the insights of science, and all you need to do is make these ideas available in a way that's accessible. So you don't have to go through hoops the way a television show would or a movie producer would. We have the material.
So what do you hope that people will be taking home from the festival? Like, say somebody who has never been exposed to this kind of dynamic science before, what do you want them to remember?
We're these little beings living our lives out on this planet, orbiting this nondescript star, I should say, in the outskirts of a galaxy. And we can feel very distant from the cosmos. But when we realize that we've been able to figure out how the universe evolved from a fraction of a second after the beginning, and we've been able to write down laws that have governed its evolution from back then and perhaps will do so for 100 billion years into the future, when we realize that through the power of thought and ingenuity, the human species has reached out to the entire universe and grabbed hold of it, wow, there's such a feeling of connection to the cosmos that generates. And if people could leave with that sense, I think that would be a great thing.
Our thanks today to physicist Brian Green. You can subscribe to this and other free science podcasts on our website. Just visit the subscribe page at earthsky.org. I'm Lindsay Patterson for Earth and Sky, a clear voice for science.
We're at earthsky.org.